You're listening to your good news station, WCNO Palm City.
The following program was recorded at an earlier date.
Welcome to the Mindy Molina Show. I'm Mindy Molina, investment advisor representative, licensed insurance agent, and fiduciary. This is a live show, and I'll be here to take your calls at 772-221-1100 with any of your financial concerns. Again, that's 772-221-1100. Hello, friends. This is Mindy Molina, and you're listening to the Mindy Molina Show here on WCNO 89.9 FM. I am here live every Wednesday from 4 to 5, and it is a live show, so feel free to call in, share a story, share a thought, any insight, or ask a question. And the number is 772-221-1100. Again, 772-221-1100. And we'll batch you in and we'll get you on the show and have a little discussion. Today, I have a special guest, Tim McCreary, here with me today. Say hello, Tim.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for having me. Appreciate you inviting me and being here.
I'm very excited that Tim's on the show today because we've been doing this show for 2 years now, which seems like it's not been that long, but it does go by fast. So thank you for all of your support and listening and tuning in. Hopefully you've learned some stuff along the way. But I wanted Tim to come on the show with me because I wanted to do a show on generational wealth. And you've heard me talk about the importance of it and how much I think that's something that is my passion and a little bit of my ministry from this, especially in the middle class. And establishing that mindset and putting that in your heart from a biblical standpoint that God wants you to build generational wealth. He wants you to establish a way for the generations to come because you are his people. So, and part of the reason that I guess he spoke to me is because time after time I would meet with a couple and be talking to them about their finances and they would say, we're not concerned. We don't want to leave anything to our kids. We had to make it. They can make it on their own. So it's kind of like this idea that you're doing them justice by giving them nothing, leaving them nothing. And I don't believe that that's what God intended. So we're going to dive into that today. But one of the reasons that I have Tim here is because his family story is just something that I admire and I think is beautiful from what his parents were able to build for him and his brothers. And then what he and then establish that mentality and that godly financial outlook into them as well for their, you know, children. So the verse that I wanted to refer to is Proverbs 13:22. A good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, but a sinner's wealth is stored up for the righteous. I think this verse is just a constant reminder of this is your duty is to provide for your children's children. So I'm going to let him tell a little bit about his story. But also, I'd like to say he's no stranger to the investment world yourself, Tim. So your history or your career actually took you through the investment stuff. So you have a lot of background with investing from starting out where on the stock exchange?
Well, my first exposure to the financial industry was actually kind of a reverse of a lot of people. I was introduced to it on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. I was fortunate enough after college to get a job through one of my parents' friends working in the D-mark option. The German mark option on the exchange floor. Obviously, it shows my age. The German mark is no longer traded. It's now the euro. But that was kind of my foray into it. I was introduced to the highly speculative, highly leveraged world of futures and options trading. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, it was, why would anybody even want to buy a stock when there's no leverage, there's minimal volatility? So for me, it was I went from zero to 100,
right,
which made it exciting, but
which is the opposite of me because I came in from the insurance standpoint, which is 100% protection, 100% safety, you know, taking the most conservative approach to investing.
And the irony of it is now I run an insurance company. So I went from being the highly leveraged, very volatile to now I'm protecting balance sheets and assets through paper policies.
Well, it's a wide spectrum. I know you have lots of knowledge and expertise and experience. And so I'm glad that you're on the show today and we'll kind of get some insight and talk about generational wealth, because that's the focal of today. Is tell the story, really, I guess, your mom and your dad, where they came from. So how did they start out in life?
It's kind of ironic that I'm even speaking about generational wealth. My parents both grew up in a very, very poor environment. My mother grew up in Wheeling, West Virginia, on the wrong side of the tracks, as she said. And my father grew up across in the Ohio River. And he was both of them extremely smart, extremely disciplined. My father was a very good athlete. All he wanted to do was play football at Notre Dame. My grandparents couldn't afford to send him anywhere. He got an academic and athletic scholarship to United States Military Academy at West Point, and which is, you know, one of the hardest institutions academically to get into in the world. So that's, I guess, where he gained a lot of his insight, discipline, and persistence. But he said he hated it. He used to walk down the hallways and punch the lockers and didn't want to be there. You know, fast forward to where I grew up, I did a visit to West Point. The person who was given my brothers and I, if we wanted to consider that recommendation, was the Joint Chief of Staff at the time, Shinseki, which was remarkable. I didn't even know what a Joint Chief of Staff was.
Your dad established some connections.
Well, there's not a lot of slouches that get in and none come out of West Point. So mm-hmm. I didn't realize that at 18. I wanted to go surf and hang out at the beach, but hindsight's 20/20. But yeah, so, and it's ironic because, when I grew up, again, we didn't have much money at all. My mother had a car that needed to be hot wired underneath. I had three other brothers. I didn't know milk came from cows. I thought it came out of a big red box because we drank powdered milk that came out of a carnation milk, it was called,
carnation,
with a big pink flower on the side of it. So very humble beginnings, but my father had started a couple companies, a couple of them failed. He was into aviation heavily and had a business that his partner actually ran into the ground. Got a job, seling insurance, but then it was my mother who found religion, found the Lord, and prayed and prayed and prayed and prayed. And my father, too, found the Lord and became very disciplined, a very intelligent man. It was a studied the Bible, read the Word, could quote scriptures left, right, on any topic, in any dimension, at any level. So we grew up in that environment. Mm-hmm. And through that, he started his own company, put all the money back into the company, put all his time, worked, 80 hours a week. We didn't see him for many, many years. He actually went to law school at night full time. So my mother basically, she'll tell you she raised four boys on her own, which, left a lot of gray hair and a lot of scars. We were not the most well-behaved children, as you can imagine. But, so I did grow up with a very good Christian foundation from both of my parents. It was something that, they struggled and struggled financially for a long time, and they put all their money, before my father started his company, into sending us to a private school, Christian school down in Miami.
Yeah.
So, that was something that was very important to me. But, as he became more and more successful, he was driving those principles into us. And one of the big things that he did do was, was the storehouse principle. And it says in Deuteronomy 8 that the Lord will command the blessing on you in your storehouse and all what you do and get in your hands. He will bless you in your land in which he gave you. And I think kind of the operative word of the word that sticks out to me is that he will command that blessing. It's not something that, it's earned or bestowed. It's a command. Other than the Ten Commandments, there's not a command of blessings in the Bible. In Deuteronomy 28:8 is one of them. And it's a pretty simple, it's basically save, 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 save. But it's got a biblical principle to it on the savings aspect. And there's an operating component of, you don't save money and God's going to bless you and he's going to make everything fine and money's going to start falling out of the sky. It's one of those, you have to obey him as he guides you and put his principles into effect. So it's kind of like the, everybody loves the idea of success and being successful, but very few people do the work to get there.
Right.
It's the same thing. You could start a storehouse, but until you, you know, are you guided by his words, you do what he says and put his principles into effect, that's when your storehouse will really begin to grow in abundance.
So do you think there was a turning point for, or what was the turning point, I guess, for your parents and going from poverty to wealth?
It was, you know, when my mother got on her hands and prayed. I mean, it helped that my father was extremely disciplined, extremely persistent, military man. You know, we're in there watching The Simpsons, and he would literally come in and say, I could watch you guys get dumber and dumber as the minutes go by watching this show. While he's in there reading, you know, business magazines, insurance magazines, the Bible's always open. He was just poured himself into everything he did. So it was one of those where, you know, God, as he started believing and praying and, you know, the word started manifesting itself through him, he started to grow and become very successful. And I remember after he sold his company, I wanted to start a business with him, and he said, anything but insurance. And then, you know, I'm like, this was Thanksgiving. I came home Christmas. This is back in like 2004. He's like, you know, come back in 2000, you know, come back at Christmas. And again, this is 2004, 2005. And I'm like, okay, I write something down on a cocktail napkin. And he's like, all right, we're getting back into the insurance business. I'm like, you don't want to do it. You've already sold an insurance company. He goes, I prayed, we're doing it. So I'm like, all right, write down what you want this to look like. I write it down. And he simply put a piece of paper. I'm, you know, I got an MBA in finance, and I'm writing all these business models and processes and programs and procedures in place to run a business I know nothing about.
Right.
And his slides his over, and it says, we're going to give $1 million away every year to the Lord. And I was like, holy cow. I was like, you know, what do I get? He goes, you get to give $1 million away every year to the Lord. And I was kind of blown away by that, because I'm like, you know, he already had his houses and helicopter and airplane and all the toys and all that stuff.
He's established.
Established, but all of us went through college. We didn't pay a nickel for any of it. And it was, you know, he's like, that's it. That's all I want to do is just give it back to God. And, you know, if you look back to the storehouse principle, you could see time and time again where, you know, God is a God of yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And for us to be able to bless people tomorrow, we have to store up everything today so we are able to provide for the future.
Yeah.
You
right.
know, and for me now, as I look at my investments, I'm like, all right, 20 years. I'm like, how's this going to help my daughter? What is this going to do for my daughter? Where can my daughter, you know, trade this commodity in for something that's valuable to her so she can help other people?
Yes.
And yeah, it's...
So one of the things with the storehouse principle that I pulled from it was that during the times, like that 7-year run, right? Was it Joshua? Who was it that was storing up? So it's like you have
Joseph.
You have a 7-year run of prosperity, right, in the economy, and not always. And we've seen that I've seen it cycle through over time. And you take advantage during that time when the economy is good, when the stock market is good, when things are good, and you have the ability to have a good job, you take advantage of that. And that's when you're storing up. That's when you're creating this storehouse. So you're saving, saving, saving. And then when times are hard, you have the ability to buy or invest in things that are at a lower value because of the economy. So now you have the ability to step in because of the money that you've saved. It creates a huge opportunity and puts you in a better position than most people, because now you have buying power where other people are struggling because of the economy. And I thought that was really kind of in line with where we are now. I think a lot of people believe, because of the new administration, there's going to be a good run, as Trump is calling it, the golden age. So I think it right now is a great reminder of, hey, let's not waste it. If it does turn out to be an incredible run, then now is the time to take advantage of that and store up so that if or when things cycle back, you have buying power and the ability to bless those that are going to be in need at that time.
Sure. I mean, it's abundantly clear. We could see it, you know, just through our daily lives that, you know, economic cycles persist. They're, you know, steep climbs and huge valleys. And it's the people who save, you know, like the Wall Street says, you got to have gunpowder. You know, one of Warren Buffett's more famous sayings is, when everybody's being greedy, be fearful. And he's like, when there's blood in the streets, that's when you get greedy. So It's exactly, you know, you want to have, you know, everything in your house in order in the good times. You want to save it for the bad times. You know, you want to have, you know, why? That's why these large companies have hordes and hordes of cash, because they know there's going to be an economic cycle, and the folks that are leveraged, the folks that are running, you know, no working capital, as soon as something bad happens, they're going to be in a lot of trouble. They're going to swoop in with their cash, buy them at a huge discount, and it's going to be accretive to the bottom line. And that's how the rich get richer. And I think, you know, God wants, you know, you hear all the time, money's the root of all evil. But, you know, the Bible said God has plans for you that you prosper and that you are successful. But what people don't really put in the pretext of that is it's the love of money. I mean, it's the love of, don't put any other idol before me. And certainly money's one of the easiest and most prominent things. You see everybody with their houses and their cars and their jets and all their fancy, you know, material things that they put in front of what they should be putting up, which is God and family and community. So, you know, it's one of those where it's a pretty simple and well-known conversation, but very few people do it. They want to keep up with the Joneses. They want to spend their money. They want to buy now. Even the folks that have like a scarcity mentality are like, I need it now, and they'll go into debt to get it.
So elaborate or talk about debt a little bit. What are some of the principles, I guess, or ideas around debt?
I mean, it there's kind of a difference from a personal budget standpoint. You know, we grew up, if you want to stay, you know, staying out of debt's very simple. If you can't afford it, don't buy it. That's it. Yeah. If you don't have it, the money in your pocket, you go without. I mean, you know, and you look at the amount of debt, trillions of dollars of consumer debt. This is a consumer-driven world. You got all this social media that's putting the emphasis on, you know, what's the next shiny and fast object. But for me, it's, you know, there's different types of debt. You take $10,000 out to go on vacation. You come home, you got no collateralized asset.
Right.
You know, there's collateralized debt, uncollateralized debt. There's, you know, and there's leverage in the business world. And a lot of people make money off other people's money.
Kind of like the exchange.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's no different than, you know, what we saw in the housing crisis. Mm-hmm. When people, you know, they had this low lending standards and people were just gobbling up as much dirt as they can in real estate. And then we had one quick turn and the whole thing collapsed.
Yeah. And who benefited from that? The people that had cash on hand.
You take a company like Blackstone, one of the, you know, biggest hedge funds in the country, they own more homes than anybody in the country.
Yeah.
So it's one of those where, and it's very difficult too. It's one of those where, you know, in my company, I have people come to me and they're like, well, how do you save money and how do you invest and how do you, you know, and I'm like, you know, you can read, you see this stuff on Yahoo. It's like, don't go to Starbucks and buy a $4 coffee, which I think that's an old article. They're probably $6 now.
Yeah.
You know, drink your coffee at home. You know, don't go to a restaurant with white tablecloths. Go to, you know, a lesser, I don't want to say, you know, to mention any name. Go to a TGI Fridays or a Chili's or
something cheaper.
Something a little bit, you know, more moderate. But, so, you know, it's to me, it's not, you could do that all day. You're going to save $2,000 a year, but it's, you know, a lot of people outkick themselves and to become, you know, slaves to their houses. I mean, I'm fortunate I do have a nice income, but when I bought my house, I paid one time my gross income. The conventional wisdom is you pay three times your gross income. You make $500,000, you buy a million and a half dollar home is what you can afford off your gross numbers. That's, you know, that's also coming from the banks. It's like asking a barber if you need a haircut, but I didn't. I moved into the most affordable home that I wanted to live in. It was close to the office, and I bought it one times my gross income, and I was done.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, going to Starbucks ain't going to do the move the needle.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I don't have any debt on my houses. I have a couple of houses. I don't have any debt. You know, but not everybody's in that position. You look at the, you know, historically, the median house price was 3 times income. Now it's almost 6. So.
Well, I think it circles back to the idea here, which is the work that your parents put in obviously has created an opportunity for you, whether, like, I mean, it could tie back to so many things, resources for even if it's people, introducing to the right people, getting into the right schools. But that's why creating what, you know, everything that I do today, everything that you do today, or the people that are listening, can and will impact the opportunities that our children have. So not everyone is in that position, but their children can be in that position if they put in the work today. Do
yeah,
you
absolutely.
Believe that?
You look at, if you could Google this, but if you look, there's a lot of different ways to get to the end result of, like, for my daughter, it's if I put in $50 a week every week and give her $100 every birthday, every Christmas, and I put money into my daughter's bank before she was born. But, you know, you look at the compounding effect, it's a geodesic curve that just, you mm-hmm. know, it lulls along, but then it just skyrockets.
Exactly.
You know, let's call it, looks like Santa's belly, you know. So if you started that at a young age, not only does it give them kind of the exposure to it, but it gives them the actual cash in the bank where you say, this is what you have, this is what you have. If you did that, by the time they're 60, they'll have $4 million in the bank.
Yes.
If you stop doing it when they're 25, just because of the power of compounding. There's other ways to, you know, the time value of money is easy to calculate. But, you know, it's again, it's going back to the, you know, the storehouse principle. That's what God's got us to do. We just have to put those principles into effect. Yeah, you got to sacrifice. You got to skip meals. You got to drive a lesser name brand car. You got to wear shoes that are not as cool as the next door neighbor's shoes. But, you know, it's the millionaire next door mentality. Mm-hmm. And if you instill it into them early and often, it'll be ingrained in them. And then they know that, you know, that, hey, if I do that along with what my parents are doing, there'll be enough money for my kids and my kids' kids. And that's how I think God wants us to behave, because he wants you to take that. The storehouse isn't to buy Ferraris and, you know, houses. It's to help the lease of these. It's to help. He'll tell you when and where you need to deploy that capital so that you could help his people. You know, and another thing, my parents would, you know, they would gift us money, and we had stock in his original company, and he's like, you have to give 10%. And he goes, by the way, the 10% I'm giving you has to go to, we're not saving the dolphins or the manatees. We are giving this to for people on the ground that are teaching the word of God, salvation warriors, and kids who need it in a godly manner. So yeah. you have to come back to me and show me where you deployed that capital. So it's one of those where we were forced to do it, and it was, you know, some of it was a contingency. You want this, you got to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was all based on, you know, the word of God.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So the giving aspect was taught to you at an early age.
Absolutely.
And not just have a generous heart, but in a strategic format.
Yeah, and I remember that when we were younger, the church was taking a collection for a poor family, and my mother gave her last $3 to the church, and the offering was for us.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's, you know, I've seen evidence of it time and time again. So for me, I could kind of gravitate towards these real life experiences.
Yes. So for someone that's listening that maybe is struggling now, they have 3 children. This all sounds great. And wouldn't it be wonderful if, how do you get started today and take action today on making changes or doing what it takes? I know, like, there's certain barriers, there's certain hurdles that I think anyone in a position can see. When you do your budget and you're in the negative on the monthly basis, it's hard to have to create a storehouse. Or if you have financial burdens that come up that are unexpected. So how do you get over the mentality even that it's possible?
I think it really starts with your attitude. You have to have an attitude of abundance. And I think look no further than out the window where, you know, God had an attitude of abundance. I mean, I'll just go to kind of what I see when I look outside. I know that all these cars and planes and trains and everything's running off of these fossil fuels that God gave us to use. Mm-hmm. And if you look back in the, whatever, 50s, 60s, that everybody's like, we're going to run out of energy, where the whole world's going to end. You know, fast forward, we get a little technology. Now we're finding these oil basins, you know, the oil sands in Canada, the basins in the fracking in the U.S., and the largest oil deposits found off the coast of Brazil. I'm like, you know, he'll make that available. And I think even that attitude of abundance is when we run out of fossil fuels, which is probably going to happen. We've got other alternatives. We've got nuclear. And if you don't like the nuclear aspect, he gave us all of these raw materials that we could use. We could use hydrogen, we could use wind, we can use solar. So I think that attitude of abundance he had when he created the earth, mm-hmm. you know, however many years ago, that you've got to have that first attitude. And then again, you got to put it into practice. But even
and having faith in the unseen. So what I'm hearing you say is yes. And in that time there, it didn't appear to be enough. However, we're not God and we didn't know what the future held and what was actually out there. Right. And so you apply that to your own personal situation.
And I think it's after the attitude, you've got to have the action. So there, you've got to have, well, I've got nothing. Well, they've got these apps where you could pay with your Apple Pay and your bill is $1.65. And you could take that, round it up to the next dollar, and it'll take that spare change and dump it into an account.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Robin Hood or whoever.
Right.
I don't know what they have, but they're out there. Just, you know, we've got also this economic principle called lifestyle creep. God might give you that promotion, and the economic principle is that lifestyle creep's going to take over, and all those additional monies that are now going into your paycheck,
mm-hmm.
you're going to spend on the little frivolous things that you want. But you need to take that and put that money in. I mean, I get a six-figure bonus every year. You know what I did with it? You know what I bought with it this year? Nothing. I didn't buy a watch. I didn't buy new shoes. I didn't buy anything. I put it all in the bank.
Yeah.
So it's one of those where you got to, you know, get into that. Okay, it's going to take a little sacrifice, but I'm doing this for my kid and my kid's kid.
Yes. What about life insurance?
I mean, life insurance definitely is one of those things where, you know, it's very affordable if you buy it. You know, at certain points, it's makes a lot of sense if you've got kids and you've got a mortgage. And, you know, for me, I had my daughter when I was 43.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, I didn't want to straddle her with any type of debt, but that's a great protection. I mean, you get term insurance for
cheap.
Nothing. A dinner a month.
Right.
Expensive dinner, not a Chili's. I think that life insurance definitely plays a key component depending on where you are financially and where you are with your kids and what you have acquired and accumulated from a debt and asset standpoint.
So what about tithing? You know, I think at one time before I really started studying the word, I just had this thought that, okay, you go to church and you tithe, you give 10%, and then voila, it just all works out. But
again, it's
that didn't play out to be true for me, so I'm
right,
curious.
But my question is for you, did you put God's words into effect? I mean,
So when you were talking about that, like, you know, unpack that a little more. What are they and what is
The word of God. You can't go out and live a secular life and put 10% into the church and expect great things to happen.
Right.
I mean, it's, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that I'm the most well-behaved person in the room even. I'm sure I'm not. But again, it's you got to put actions with the attitude. And, you know, it's following the word of God and living a Christ-like life. And that's when the blessings became bestowed upon my family.
And well, I know you, when you talk about your dad, the word discipline just echoes over and over and over. And I know discipline is a huge, huge part of it. I've never been a routine person. I like.
I mean, why do it today when I can put it off till tomorrow? I mean, if I had my dad's discipline, I would be given a different topic on generational wealth.
Yeah, I know it's easier said than done, but I do believe that there is a shift in really mindset, attitude, like you said, and I think there's a lot of opportunity as we kind of phase into this new administration, new year, new opportunities are going to unveil, and really having an attitude of abundance. I think that is new to me. I think that's a good, really good lesson. And then being disciplined with it, like believing in prosperity, which is what God wants for us. I think sometimes we get trapped in this mindset of struggle and sacrifice as being the way of, like it's wrong to be wealthy or have the things that you want or to have the stability.
But I mean, God needs us to be wealthy. We just need to be good stewards of his money.
Right.
I mean, it says, I mean, obviously we have this, you know, drive-through mentality where we get everything right now and I need my internet to download right now. And we have this now. We have a very gambleist attitude towards, hey, I'm going to buy cryptocurrency. And, you know, I just saw this meme where this guy was eating a bag of chips and the meme was, this is how your crypto works. And he puts his chips under a partially open garage and then the cryptocurrency throws out a bigger bag of chips. And then he puts in his little can of Coke and the cryptocurrency garage throws out a 2-liter bottle of Coke. So then the guy empties his pockets and takes his 2-liter bottle of Coke and then sticks all his money and everything in there, and the garage closes. So it's one of those where, you know, Hard Rock opened that app and gambling in Florida from the last legislation, and you see all these, I mean, all friends and family and everybody's, you know, gambling, trying to make a fast buck. I mean, the reason why that big old guitar casino is down there is because people lose.
Right.
You know, the law of large numbers. But, you know, you got to invest diligently and wisely. You know, Proverbs says money made in haste surely will not last.
Yes.
You know, so you've got to, you know, again, if you're going to sit there and save during the good years, you've got to make sure that it can get you through the bad years.
Right. Yeah. What about being generous? Generosity. You know, I feel like sometimes it's when is giving not a good idea? When is giving a great idea?
It's always a great idea. And the concept is you got to means test yourself. I mean, you don't want to take food out of your own mouth or your own table to provide unless God tells you. Like I said, my mother gave her last $3 to the church and the offering was for her. So yeah. It's one of those where, again, it's start small. But I think when you see the kind of the accretive value of saving and at the end of the year, you're like, oh, my goodness, there's a difference. Mm-hmm. So that will help in case we have a car accident or a medical emergency or a hurricane or one of those things. But
yeah.
And even going back to tithing, I think when you tithe, you need to tithe to yourself too. I mean, you're giving 10%. I mean, give some to yourself because God is going to put you in a position to help other people and you have to have the means to do it.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're going to give to six people, give to five, keep one as yourself or dilute
Which
it. And
is ultimately it the storehouse
yeah.
principle.
Correct.
So in just up to this point and kind of summary is being super disciplined, putting in the work, and also education seems to be a really big key. I mean, that's been the format of your parents getting where they were, school. And even when your dad finished and continued, he went back to school to get his law degree, right?
Correct. I mean, I've got 3 college degrees, and I'm probably proof that education is no measurement of intelligence. But no, I think it depends. I think education was more of a stigma years ago. I think, I mean, anything, trade schools, but I have always said as a business owner, I would hire a military individual over a college graduate.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all, too, it's you get out of it what you put in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was not the best college student. I got good grades, but I certainly did the bare minimum, and I took my discretion time and did not use it wisely, but I had a lot of fun.
Right.
So.
So, discipline, think getting financially literate, you know, educating and then educating your kids. So if we talk about education for a little bit, what do you, I mean, you've obviously taught you how to be generous, taught you about giving. Do you think, how transparent were your parents about money and about, you know, their own finances?
They really didn't have money until we left home. So I grew up very modest. I mean, my mother always said, you never had a new article of clothing or pair of shoes until you were about six. But kind of going, you know, back to the education thing, I mean, yeah, I've got several college degrees. I've got several securities licenses. I've got insurance licenses. I've got probably five or six designations. So I'm an educated idiot is what I call myself. But, you know, as far as financing goes, and I have a lot of people come into my office and, you know, I'm like, you got to put into the 401k. You got to stay. I mean, even, you know, if the company's matching 6%, you give 6%, that's free money.
Right.
I'm like, you're giving away free money. The other thing is I'll have somebody come to my office that's planning for a trip. They're going to Europe. They'll spend countless amount of hours. Where am I going to go? What country? What city? What am I going to do? What am I going to eat? What's the culture? What's this? And then they'll come in and talk about their 401k, and I'll be like, okay, you're giving now. What did you do to educate yourself? They're like, nothing. I don't understand it. I'm like, you'll spend 3 weeks on a vacation that you're going to spend all that money on that you worked hard for, and the vacation's going to last 5 days, 10 days. You're going to come home with nothing but a sunburn and an empty wallet. But you won't spend 3 weeks, a year, going over your finances and your budget.
You're right.
Like, well, I don't like numbers. I'm like, this is not rocket science. It's very, very simple concepts that, you know, people for some reason decide to ignore. But the thing is with money, you never underestimate the power of doing nothing. Because just so you, I got $100,000 in the bank, and if I don't do anything, I can't lose it. And in 10 years, I'll have $100,000 in the bank. I'm like, no, you won't. You'll have about $60,000 in the bank, because that $100,000, all that purchasing power, wiped away your money.
Because of inflation, yes.
Yeah, I'm like, you, instead of buying, you know, 100 loaves of bread and 60 dozen eggs, you buy 50 loaves of bread and 30 mm-hmm. dozen eggs.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you got to put your money to work.
So when do you think is the proper time to, well, I guess that's kind of a loaded question, obviously.
Zero.
Always...
But that's where the biggest impact is. You want your biggest ROI, your return on investment, mm-hmm. start small, but start often. But, you know, I think if, and you look at it, and I look at these high school curriculums and, you know, reading, writing, arithmetic's great and all that, and college is great, but I'm like, teach kids, show them what compounding is and the power of money if they start. Somebody, you know, I was fortunate enough, my father bought us all like a share of stock when we were little. I think one brother got Eastern, bankrupt. I got McDonald's. My other brother got Disney. And I don't remember what the other was. But it was like, you know, I get a 2-cent dividend check and be like, hey, money in the mail. But
yeah.
Hey, that's passive money. I didn't have to do anything. And they're sending me 2 cents.
Yeah.
You know, fast forward all those years and you're like, hey, I'm going to use that money to live off of.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be my life support. When your income's gone, you have to have passive income or a hefty retirement to survive.
Right. That you don't have to work for.
I mean, we're in the problem that we have now from a budgetary standpoint, governmentally, because entitlements. I mean, you got Elon and Vivek in a slash. You know, if they take 40% out of the non-discretionary funds, or, you know, there's still going to be 60% of that budget that's not going anywhere because of entitlements, because people don't. They don't save. They don't think about legacy, all the things you do, the health care, the retirement, the income, mm-hmm. the, you know.
So budgeting is like a really big center part of my planning. So when I sit down with someone, we go and get into the budget pretty quickly or and pretty deep. Like I try to be very detailed with it, because once they do retire, what they're being able to maintain their lifestyle is all hinged on how much they spend in that. And something that I think it's brought out to me is just how much people don't realize, they really have no idea what they spend every month. And then you factor in credit cards or debt into that. and it becomes like snowball effect of harder and harder to overcome without some serious changes. So if making the right adjustments, it's like, how do you get established so that you can overcome some of those objectives? And my go-to is the budget, is really knowing your own numbers and knowing exactly where what money is coming in and where it goes when it goes out. And even one of the things I did around the holidays was having people reflect on their bank statement or their credit card statements, their statements from the year before of what they spent in that last quarter. So do you feel like you're dialed into a very specific budget, or is that not something that you...
Can I get an easier question? I'm very dialed in. I mean, I've got an Excel spreadsheet that's probably 70 lines deep.
Yeah. But,
you know, it goes out the window sometimes when I'm out and impulsive. But, you know, I have enough, I guess, cash in the bank where I've got no economic imperative to worry about where my next meal's coming from. But I have helped a lot of people. And when you do pull out those bank statements and credit card statements and ATM receipts and you put it down in paper and you multiply all of those other, you know, fixed numbers times 12 and you add it all up, people are blown away by, you know, I helped a lady whose husband, who was very wealthy, pass, and I'm like, you have no clue what he spent. I'm like, do you know how much, you know, X amount of dollars, do you know how much aviation fuel costs? Do you know how much, you know, diesel costs at a marina? Do you know how big that tank is? Do you know how much that insurance is? Do you know how much maintenance is? They're like, well, I didn't think about all that. I'm like, yeah, that's before anything breaks or anything bad happens.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, the burn rate just coming and going and on the daily life is you can't go anywhere. You can't open the door without, you know, spending money.
I know.
Getting your car, you get to the grocery store, you get a haircut.
I feel like every time I walk out the door, it costs $100. If I just go to work and come home and not leave, I could save $100 a day. Saving strategies are, I think, really boil down to the budget. So in terms of building generational wealth, for me, my dad always, you know, included me, I would say probably preteen up. I was always involved in managing the money for the farm. And that's kind of where my career started, was with him, because we would get one check, maybe three checks at the end of the year, because you sell your harvest and that was it. And you had to make that money last for an entire year. Now, my dad, I think saving was instilled into him simply because of his life story. And his dad died early and he was just left with this responsibility at about 19 years old, and he had to learn the hard way of what it's like to run out of money, because when you have a farm, that's how it is. You get one check at the end of the year. So saving and managing growing up was just a way of life. Like, that's how we did it. And even coming into the holidays, we would each get a certain amount of money, and that was it. He would take us to Kmart or wherever and turn us loose, and we had to go and buy everybody a gift on our $50 or whatever it was going to be for that year. And then that was it. But there were so many limitations, where now I feel like people don't have the limitations. It's just a free-for-all of spending is so much easier than maybe it was.
Yeah, I mean, access before. To capital. I mean, you look at, you know, the trillions of dollars of consumer debt, credit card debt, consumer debt versus a saving rate. I mean, the only decent saving rate we had was when COVID shut us down. That's it. All that money's been blown.
So in your mindset now, how do you think you differ from, you know, I would assume when your parents started out, they weren't thinking about our kids and what they're going to have. It was really just getting by. And then that shifted. But what is your mindset, do you feel like, for you and for your brothers, for the next generation?
I think, you know, one, it's, I go to, at first I was like, dang, imagine how much money you'd have if you didn't have four kids. Holy cow, those things are expensive. But he didn't have a choice at that point. No, I do. I mean, everything I do, I had rental homes. I sold them all. I kept one for my daughter. I'm like, in case she needs it, you know, she's 11. And, you know, even I'm like, do I buy a Chick-fil-A franchise? Do I buy a building? Do I buy a plaza? What do I do? You know, something that I could just make sure that she's in a position to take care of herself, and not just herself, but help other people. And, you know, when we're in the grocery store, I'll buy somebody's groceries. Or if I see somebody at the side of the road, I'll give them some food. Or, you know, my mother passes out these Publix gift cards and she gives money away. It's funny. She used to give money away to a guy in our neighborhood who was walking the streets with his wife and wasn't, you know, dressed that well. And she pulls up and gives him money. I'm like, oh, that guy's a judge. He's got a big house in the water. I'm like, what do you? She's like, God told me to give him $300. But he said to my mother, I don't need it. I need your prayers, but I will give this $300 to somebody else. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I'm like, you just drive around. I'm like, yeah, literally, he should be giving me $300. But, you know, he's like, and he needed her prayers because his wife was in very, very bad health situation. So he's like, I need your prayers. So I'm glad you pulled over because I need prayer. But.
So I would say in the kind of wrapping up this discussion and summarizing some of the topics here, one is what you can take action and do now, which is contributing to your 401k. If it's possible, trying to level up your career, whether through education, certifications, adding another skill set, going to taking classes at night, doing online courses, doing whatever you can to accelerate your income or increase your income ability through your work, or maybe even doing side businesses, doing anything you can to increase your income, to get your budget in check so that you are in a position to save. That might also mean downsizing, cutting out things, but you don't, until you really identify what those things are and where you might be able to save. Like, I know one year I realized that if I would just stop going to Home Depot, I would save so much money, because in the Home Goods, those were my two places where I was just spending way more than necessary, and it worked. Just don't go there, and you're not going to have these impulses to buy things that you really don't need, that aren't necessities. So finding out how you can reduce your spending is huge. Also, reducing debt, avoiding debt. What was the thing you said? If you can't afford it,
don't buy it. Pretty simple.
Yeah, that's very, very good, easy.
I see a lot of people buy these things with their credit card where the item that they buy doesn't last as long as it takes them to pay it off.
Yeah.
Jeez almighty.
So reducing debt is huge. And there's a lot of different strategies on how to pay down your debt faster. Focusing on the one that has the highest interest rate and paying everything towards that one above and beyond your minimum payments. And then when you get that one paid off, go to the next one. Go above and beyond. But again, it's budgeting, and being disciplined and being consistent and mindful, and knowing that one of the reasons that we're having this conversation is we're coming hopefully into a season of prosperity in the economy. And what we want you to do is take advantage of that. Absolutely put your head down and take advantage of opportunities now, so that in the future you're ahead of the game and you can be one of those people that is able to invest in any opportunities when the market cycles back. You buy, sell high, buy low. And if you don't have any buying power during that time, then if you have no money saved, you can't take advantage of those things, because that's when you're really able to level up. And that's what the storehouse principle is, really an overall summary of that concept, don't you think?
No, absolutely. And the other thing is too, is, you know, people say, how do you get money? How do you do this? And also it's got to be calculated, but you have to take risk. I mean, once you get over all the budget, you know, I had somebody come into my office and they're like, hey, what did you know, I need help with my 401k. I'm like, well, I don't know. I don't pay attention much to my 401k. It's limited. I've got, you know, various options. I got whatever qualified versus not qualified, but I happened to go in a year ago, I think August 23, and I saw there was a you know, an AI ETF, which is artificial intelligence, which is the soup of the day, electronically traded fund. I'm like, oh my goodness, they got actually something that I would put everything in it, everything, all my current funds and all my future contributions. Thing has gone through the roof, but it's one of those where a little bit of diligence. I just happened to open it up. I just happened to, usually I look and see, all right, I'm in this healthcare Vanguard fund. I did 18%. The market did 14. I beat it by 4. I just scrolled down. I'm like, oh, they just added a, you know, a shock. They put something like that in there. But, you know, little things like that. And I mean, it moved the needle dramatically. I mean,
yeah, pays off. And I think it's easier to take risk when you have this abundance attitude.
Yeah, absolutely. And the lady who came to my office, she's like, I did it. And she came in, you know, at the beginning or the end of this year, not too long ago. She's like, oh my gosh. She goes, I can't believe what happened. I'm like, you didn't do anything. All you did is hit a button.
Right.
I'm like, that's...
Put the time in.
Sometimes that, what, like I said, you'll spend 3 weeks on your vacation and less than 3 minutes on your finances. I mean, you know, it's you know, watch, take, like, we had make it happen Monday.
Yes.
So take an hour a week just to start. And just, you know, the easiest way to do it is go into your phone, look at your settings, and go to screen time. See how much time you look. I get caught scrolling through those reels, and I'll be like, well, there's an hour, 15 minutes of my life I'll never get back that I could have, you know, done anything else.
Right.
I could have literally, you know, brushed my teeth for an hour and got more out of it. But, you know, watching those reels is like brushing your teeth and eating Oreos at the same time. It does absolutely nothing for you.
Yeah.
It's not going to get you anywhere other than, as my father said when we were watching The Simpsons, I could see you getting stupider. Yeah. And, you know, it's very, that's why those things are created the way they are, because they capture your attention. They're 13 seconds long, and you'll watch 87 of them in a row.
Well, that...
Put it down, or go to a finance, YouTube, Finance 101, or...
At least if you're going to have it in your hand, do something that's educational, that's going to help you get wiser when it comes to your finances.
Download the app that rounds your dollar or your purchases up to the next dollar.
Mm-hmm. So another thing was life insurance. I think this is a very good step in the right direction initially, is making sure that you have protection, because it really, term life insurance is very, very cheap. You could be paying as little as $10 a month and have something in place to at least leave your family debt free, or whether it's pay off your mortgage so that the house, they're kicked out of their house, pay for the kids' colleges, be able to get your family through to the next phase of life. So life insurance is a place to start. There's also IUL policies where you can kind of have both, where you're putting money into the life insurance, it's building cash value, and the idea is that you don't die, thank God, and then you no longer have the burden that, you know, paying off your mortgage, maybe you don't have the debt, but now you have this cash value that you can utilize or have access to for tax-free retirement through loans with these systems. So it's at least a place to start funding, not only taking care of two birds with one stone, getting your death benefit in play so that your family is secure, and then also starting to save for retirement as well. And those are not that expensive. What about properties, real estate? Do you feel like that's a good, or has that been good? Was that an important piece of the puzzle for your family?
Yeah, I mean, it you look at not just my family, but, you know, a lot of generational wealth is stored in, you know, real estate assets, but you got to have a lot of money to buy the assets to do that. You could do it again with leverage. You could sit there and put $100 in or $100,000 in a stock market. You know, S&P has been doing 8% is the rule of thumb for the last 25, 30 years. But, you know, you could buy it at 20% down payment. You could buy, you know, a $500,000 building with that money. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those where you could use that leverage. And again, it's a collateralized versus a non-collateralized asset. You put $100,000 on Doge, you might be worth $6 million on Tuesday. And then next Friday, you're worth, you know, 50 grand.
Right.
So it's one of those. And I have these Bible business basics that I have framed in my office. But one of the never, never, nevers is never, you know, never risk a lot to gain a little. So it's all got to be calculated. You know, it's got to be something you're comfortable with. It's got to be something you know. And it doesn't take a lot of homework or research to, you know, expose yourself to kind of what makes prudent sense on where you're spending your dollars. I mean, look at the, you know, everybody says the Magnificent Seven. I'll bet anybody who calls in dinner anywhere in the United States that those seven stocks will beat the S&P 500 this year. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those where, you know, and put something in front of yourself. It helps me out, these, you know, business
share
basics
these,
I have.
Share these with us.
Yeah, just kind of going down. This is something my father gave me years and years ago, and I framed it and put it in my office. But, you know, going through no necessary order, it's, integrity must be a large part of what you do and who you are, and be consistent every day. Give God and others the credit for all of your success. Always pray before big decisions. Ask God for guidance every day. Fill your heart with mercy, kindness, and truth. It will greatly reward you. Expect God's favor in all that you do. The best business you have is the business you have. It pays to keep it. I actually cut that out of a magazine, and I have that framed all by itself because, you know, the business you have is, you know, there's no more acquisition costs. There's no more overhead. It's all you have. But anyway, the never nevers are never risk a lot to gain a little, never run out of cash, never make a decision when you're angry. But the most important is expect God's favor in all you do.
Well, thank you guys for listening. And thank you, Tim, for coming on the show and sharing your story and the story of your dad and all of his and your mother's success. And we appreciate you being on. This is Mindy Molina. Remember, God loves you, and there's nothing anyone can do about it.
Thanks for listening. Join us next week. And remember, if you have any concerns about your financial picture, please reach out to us at 561-729-2778. There's a no obligation consultation. All you have to do is text or call 561-729-2778. Or you can reach us on our website at www.mindymolina.com.
Mindy Molina Investments and Insurance has been protecting the retirement of families for 15 years. Information provided by Mindy Molina Investments and Insurance and or its affiliates are for informational purposes only and is not intended to be relied upon as a forecast, research, or investment advice, and is not a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any securities or to adopt any investment strategy.
Get your financial report at 561-729-2778. Or you can reach us at www.mindymolina.com.
His name, Jesus the King, who defeated the grave. Now and always, his victory remains. So crown him with praise. Then on the cross for